You're listening to 90.3 WPLN. I'm Emily Siner. Margaret Rankle wants you to know that loss is universal. But especially in her own Southern family, there's something therapeutic about keeping memories alive with stories.
I don't think that anyone is ever really completely dead in the South. I think that we carry our people with us.
The Nashville-based writer, perhaps best known for her regular columns in the New York Times, explores that idea in her debut book. It's called Late Migrations, and it weaves together short, poetic essays into a narrative about coming to terms with grief. I talked to Rankle in our studio. Margaret Rankle, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
This book has a lot of stories about the births and deaths of your family members. But in between, you write these vignettes about the natural world that you're observing outside your window. And so I'm wondering to start if you could read part of the first of these observational stories.
The first year, a day before the baby bluebirds were due to hatch, I checked the nest box just outside my office window and found a pinprick in one of the eggs. Believing it must be the pip that signals the beginnings of a hatch, I quietly closed the box and resolved not to check again right away, though the itch to peek was nearly unbearable. I've been waiting years for a family of bluebirds to take up residence in that box, and finally an egg was about to shudder and pop open. 2 days later, I realized I hadn't seen either parent in some time, so I checked again and found all 5 eggs missing. The nest was undisturbed. The cycle of life might as well be called the cycle of death. Everything that lives will die, and everything that dies will be eaten. Bluebirds eat insects, snakes eat bluebirds, hawks eat snakes, owls eat hawks. That's how wildness works, and I know it. I was heartbroken anyway.
I feel like I grew up reading Charlotte's Web and The Wind in the Willow and all the animals are friends in those books, but that's not realistic. Like, how did you think about the natural world as a child?
I must have, at some level, thought of nature in those kind of, I guess, cartoonish terms. But in real life, it was clear to me that that was not how the natural world worked. You don't have to spend very much time in nature, especially as a child, to see that if somebody steps on another bug, all the ants are going to carry it away by bits. You know, you don't have to spend very long in the woods to see that the salamanders are eating the frog eggs. So I guess I did what children do, and I assumed that what happened in storybooks was one thing and what happened in real life was another.
Why did you feel like it was important to document all of these observations of the cycle of life in this book?
When I started writing the first of the essays that make up this book, my mother had just died. My mother-in-law was in hospice care. And it was just overwhelming to me how all of this was coming together to just remind me on a daily basis, like a tolling bell, that time is running out. And yet, there was all this life outside the window. And I just was feeling that if I concentrated on that life, if I forced myself to see this rat snake coming out of the chickadee nest box and the crow stealing the cardinal's babies, then I would stop feeling so singled out for suffering. You know, it's just what happens. And what happens is not evil. It's just what happens.
You have a story in here that really stuck with me about what you saved when you were cleaning up your mother's house. Could you read a few of those paragraphs?
Sure. I saved the nicest of the towels, filling 2 closets, but none of the fabric remnants piled in the guest room, and none of the garish rhinestone brooches from the 50s, and none of the Jane Austen fan fiction, and none of the Southern Living magazines from the 80s, and none of the Hallmark Channel DVDs. The retirement home, the one you almost moved into, was grateful to have the DVDs. The retirement home, you would be glad to know, has finally gotten rid of the bed bugs. I saved all 5 giant boxes of OxyClean, and oh my God, why did you never tell me about OxyClean? At 156 loads per box, our socks have been white for all the years you've been gone. I saved 3 lipsticks and a shade of pink I will never wear, but I threw away 2 dozen more, along with bottle after bottle of expired vitamins, and don't even get me started on the expired boxes and cans in the pantry. I wish I had known how much you loved blueberry muffins. I wish I had made you blueberry muffins every day of your life.
It sounded like you were so disappointed that she didn't pass on this knowledge of OxiClean and the blueberry muffins. And it made me think about the things that mothers or other people that we care about, like, don't think is important enough to pass on.
Yeah. There's so many things when I think about my own children. What have I not mentioned to them? You know, my oldest son is 27 and he read the book. He said, you know, so many of these stories you've never said. And I didn't realize I had never told them those stories. I mean, I tell stories all the time. Southerners tell stories. That's what we do. But apparently not all of them.
That's Margaret Renkel. Her memoir, Late Migrations, comes out this week.